Vanjakaputurubhyascakripasendubhaivaccha Patitanam pavinebhyo vaisnavebhyo namo namaha. Sati became so frustrated and angry, frustrated that she was the daughter of Daksha, and angry at Daksha because of his insult to Lord Shiva. In fact, when Sati went to the sacrifice of her father, of Daksha's jagya, he completely ignored her as a way of insulting Lord Shiva because of her relationship to Lord Shiva. Because she was the wife of Lord Shiva, even though that he was his dearest daughter, youngest and dearest daughter. Still, he had so much enmity, animosity towards Lord Shiva that he wouldn't even greet her. So in this way, by neglecting Sati, he was insulting Lord Shiva further. So such a mentality. Whatever is necessary to insult you, I will do. This was the mood of Daksha, not as probably as calculating as that, but his anger and pride and enmity was so strong. So Sati was feeling so much pain and grief from Daksha's dealings that she criticized him very strongly for being inimical and envious of Lord Shiva, while Lord Shiva was so kind to all living entities and so powerful. And she decided to, instead of criticizing him, Daksha, and telling him what he should be doing, she decided to simply do what was correct for her to do. And she decided that was to leave that body, to transfer herself, the soul, the self, the actual self, the Atma, from the body that it was now inhabiting of Sati, the daughter of Daksha, into the womb of Menaka and become Parvati, the daughter of the Himalayan mountains. So she focused her consciousness upon the lotus feet of her husband, the guna avatar, tamaguna avatar, Lord Shiva, who has so many wonderful names, Nilakanta, Asutosha, Shambhu. So she focused her consciousness upon Lord Shiva, and using the yoga process, she left her body. Her body turned to flames and then ashes. And she went on, the soul, that powerful personality, went on to the body of Parvati. So Lord Shiva was furious, and we'll hear about what he did. When Lord Shiva heard from Narada that Sati, his wife, was now dead because of Prajapati Daksha's insult to her, and that his soldiers had been driven away by the Ribhu demigods, they were, because the followers of Lord Shiva had gone with Sati to protect her, and they were so upset, angry, that even in their presence they could not save her life, that she killed herself. They decided to attack Daksha and punish him. But the Brahman Bhrigu Muni, he poured oblations upon the fire, and he created some demigods, some Ribhu demigods, that were meant to protect or destroy those who tried to destroy the sacrifice, and they drove off the followers of Lord Shiva. So when Lord Shiva understood that not only Sati had been, he had been insulted further, his wife was now dead, his followers had been driven away, he decided to retaliate, and he became very, very angry. He Here's Prabhupada's purport. Lord Shiva understood that Sati, being the youngest daughter of Daksha, could present the case of Lord Shiva's purity of purpose and would thus be able to mitigate the misunderstandings between Daksha and himself. So that was his hope as well. But such a compromise was not attained, and Sati was deliberately insulted by her father by not being properly received properly when she visited his house without being invited. Sati herself could have killed her father, Daksha, because she is the personified material energy and has immense power to kill and create within this material universe. In the Brahma Samhita, her strength is described, and she is capable of creating and dissolving many universes. But although she is so powerful, she acts under the directions of the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, as his shadow. It would not have been difficult for Sati to punish her father, but she thought that since she was his daughter, it was not proper for her to kill him. Thus she decided to give up her own body, which she had obtained from his. And Daksha did not even check her. He did not even, his heart was so hard. Just imagine, his dearest daughter was telling him, I'm going to kill myself, I'm going to perform yoga. And so that means you sit down, you have to meditate, you have to focus, you have to control your mind. So this, it's not done in 30 seconds. It takes some time. And while this was going on, Daksha was cold and aloof. He did not try to inhibit her from doing this. He did not even try to stop her. So when Sati passed away, giving up her body, the news was conveyed by Narada to Lord Shiva. Narada always carries the news of such events because he knows their import. When Lord Shiva heard that his chaste wife, Sati, was dead, he naturally became exceedingly angry. He also understood that Bhrigu Muni had created the Ribhu demigods by uttering the mantras of the Yajurveda, and that these demigods had driven away all of his soldiers who were present in the arena of sacrifice. Therefore, he wanted to reply to this insult, and thus he decided to kill Daksha, because he, Daksha, was the cause of the death of Sati. Thus Lord Shiva, being extremely angry, pressed his lips with his teeth. And immediately he snatched from his head a strand of hair, which blazed like electricity or fire. He stood up at once, laughing like a madman, and he dashed the hair to the ground. A fearful black demon as high as the sky and as bright as three suns combined was thereby created. His teeth were very fearful, and the hairs on his head were like burning fire. They were reddish. He had thousands of arms equipped with various weapons, and he was garlanded with the heads of men. When that gigantic demon asked with folded hands, "What shall I do, my lord?" Lord Shiva, who is known as Bhutanath, directly ordered, "Because you are born from my body, you are the chief of all my associates. Therefore, kill Daksha and his soldiers at the sacrifice." My dear Vidura, Maitreya Muni was narrating this to Vidura. That black person was the personified anger of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And because Lord Shiva, as the word by words explain, Lord Shiva is anger personified, because Lord Shiva's job is to the pralaya, or the destruction of the world. When it is time to destroy the world, it is Lord Shiva who does it. So he is the anger of the Lord, because the anger is born of tamagun, and Lord Shiva is the lord of tamagun, of the mode of ignorance. So Lord Shiva is the anger of the Lord, and this is the personified anger of Lord Shiva meant to create such destruction. So I think his name is Virabhadra. He was prepared to execute the orders of Lord Shiva, thus considering himself capable of coping with any power offered against him, because the Brahmins, including Bhrigu Muni, they were very powerful. He circumambulated Lord Shiva, knowing that he could fulfill this task. Many other soldiers of Lord Shiva followed that fierce personality in a tumultuous uproar. He carried a great trident, fearful enough to kill even death, and on his legs he wore bangles, which seemed to roar. At that time, all the persons assembled in the sacrificial arena, the priests, the chief of the sacrificial performance, and the brahmanas and their wives, wondered where the darkness was coming from. Suddenly, at the sacrifice, everything became very dark. Later, they would understand that it was a dust storm, and all of them were full of anxiety. Conjecturing on the origin of the storm, they're wondering, what is causing this storm, all this dust to be erased and coming towards us? They said, there is no wind blowing, because wind is one cause of a dust storm. No cows are passing. When a huge herd of cows passes, they raise so much dust. Nor is it possible that this dust storm could be raised by plunderers, a huge gang of thieves coming to fight. No, it couldn't be. Why? For there is still the strong king Bari, who would punish them. So this couldn't exist during the time of this king. No thieves could be so dominant. Where is this dust storm blowing from? Is it the dissolution of the planet now to occur? They were wondering, maybe the world is going to be destroyed. It was so vast. Prasuti, who is the daughter of Devahuti, the wife of Daksha, Devahuti and Kardama, who was given to Daksha, along with the other women assembled, they became very anxious, and they said, this danger has been created by Daksha because of the death of Sati, who, even though completely innocent, quit her body as her sisters looked on. Here's Prabhupada's purport. So Prasuti could immediately understand the cause of the problem. Prasuti, being a soft-hearted woman, could immediately understand that the imminent danger approaching was due to the impious activity of hard-hearted Prajapati Daksha. He was so cruel that he would not save her youngest daughter, Sati, from the act of committing suicide in the presence of her sisters. Sati's mother could understand how much Sati had been pained by the insult of her father. Sati had been present along with the other daughters, and Daksha had purposely received all of them, but her, because she happened to be the wife of Lord Shiva. This consideration convinced the wife of Daksha of the danger which was now ahead, and thus she knew that Daksha must be prepared to die for his heinous act. At the time of the dissolution, that's text 10, Lord Shiva's hair is scattered. This is continuing what Prasuti is saying. And he pierces the rulers of the different directions with his trident. He laughs and dances proudly, scattering their hands like flags, as thunder scatters the clouds all over the world. The gigantic black man bared his fearful teeth. By the movement of his brows, he scattered the luminaries all over the sky, and he covered them with his strong, piercing effulgence. Because of the misbehavior of Daksha, even Lord Brahma, Daksha's father, could not have been saved, from the great exhibition of anger. While all the people talked amongst themselves, Daksha saw dangerous omens from all sides, from the earth and the sky. Here's Prabhupada's purport. In this verse, Daksha has been described as Mahatma. Janena Dakshasya Mahur Mahatmana. The word Mahatma has been commentated upon by different commentators in various manners. Varagavacharya has indicated that this word Mahatma means steady in heart. That is to say that Daksha was so strong-hearted, hard-hearted, that even when his beloved daughter was prepared to lay down her life, he was steady and unshaken. But in spite of his being so strong-hearted, he was perturbed when he saw the various disturbances created by the gigantic black demon. So he was so strong and fixed in what he wanted and wouldn't see things in another way. But yet he too was frightened and his mind was upset and disturbed when he perceived that Virbhadra had come. Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur remarks in this connection that even if one is called Mahatma, a great soul, unless he exhibits the symptoms of a Mahatma, he should be considered a Duratma, or a degraded soul, the opposite of a Mahatma. In Bhagavad Gita 9.13, the word Mahatma describes the pure devotee of the Lord, Mahatmanas Tumam Prata Daivim Prakritimashrita. So the Mahatmas, or the broad-minded, open-hearted souls, they are those who take shelter, Krishna tells Arjuna, of the Daivim Prakritim Ashrita. Ashrita means shelter. Daivim Prakriti means the spiritual energy, Krishna's internal energy. A Mahatma is always under the guidance of the internal energy of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And thus, how could such a misbehaved person as Daksha be a Mahatma? A Mahatma is supposed to have all the good qualities of the demigods, and thus Daksha, lacking those qualities, could not be called a Mahatma. Yet the verse says, Mahatma Daksha. So he should instead be called a Duratma, a degraded soul. That is Vishwanatha Chakravarti Thakur's conclusion. The word Mahatma, to describe the qualification of Daksha, is used sarcastically. That's the conclusion. Maitreya continues to narrate this story. My dear Vidura, all the followers of Lord Shiva surrounded the arena of sacrifice. They were of short stature and were equipped with various kinds of weapons. Their bodies appeared to be like those of sharks, blackish and yellowish. They ran around the sacrificial arena and thus began to create disturbances. This would make a great movie. Some of the soldiers pulled down the pillars which were supporting the pandal of sacrifice. Some of them entered the female quarters. Some began destroying the sacrificial arena. And some entered the kitchen and the residential quarters. They broke all the pots made for use in the sacrifice. Some of them began to extinguish the sacrificial fires. Their mood was simply disruption and destruction because of what happened to Sati. This is what happens when one is filled with a mood of anger. One doesn't care what is put in its place, but one just simply wants to destroy what's there. Some tore down the boundary lines of the sacrificial arena, and some passed urine on the arena to pollute it. Some blocked the way of the fleeing sages, some threatened the women assembled there, and some arrested the demigods who were fleeing the pandal. Maniman, one of the followers of Lord Shiva, arrested Bhrigu Muni, and Virabhadra, the black demon, arrested Prajapati Daksha. Another follower who was named Chandesh arrested Pusha. Nandishar arrested the demigod Bhaga. There was a constant shower of stones. And the priests and other members assembled at the sacrifice were put into immense misery. For fear of their lives, they dispersed in different directions. Virbhadra, who had arrested Bhrigumuni, Maniman. So Maniman had arrested Bhrigumuni, and Virbhadra tore off his mustache. So he tore off the mustache of Bhrigu, who was offering the sacrificial oblations, with his hands in the fire. Virbhadra immediately caught Bhaga, who had been moving his eyebrows during Bhrigu's cursing of Lord Shiva, and out of great anger, he thrust him to the ground and forcibly put out his eyes. Just as Baladev knocked out the teeth of Dantavakra, the king of Kalinga, we'll hear about this in the 10th canto of the Bhagavatam, during the gambling match at the marriage ceremony of Aniruddha, Virbhadra knocked out the teeth of both Daksha, who had shown them while cursing Lord Shiva. He showed his teeth, and Virbhadra knocked them out. And Pusha, who by smiling sympathetically had also shown his teeth. Interesting purport. This changes the perspective a little bit. Here a reference is made to the marriage of Aniruddha, a grandson of Lord Krishna's. He kidnapped the daughter of Dantavakra, and thereafter he was arrested. Just as he was to be punished for the kidnapping, the soldiers from Dwarka arrived, headed by Balaram, and a fight ensued amongst the Kshatriyas. This sort of fight was very common, especially during marriage ceremonies, when everyone was in a challenging spirit. In that challenging spirit, a fight was sure to occur, and in such fights, there was commonly killing and misfortune. After finishing such fighting, the parties would come to a compromise and everything would be settled. This Daksha Jagya was similar to such events. Now all of them, Daksha and the demigods, Bhaga and Pusha and Bhrigumuni, were punished by the soldiers of Lord Shiva. But later everything would come to a peaceful end. So this spirit of fighting between one another was not exactly inimical, because everyone was so powerful and wanted to show his strength by Vedic mantras or mystic power. All these fighting skills were very elaborately exhibited by the different parties of the Daksha Jagya. So they can be looked at it in different levels. On one level it is very horrible and heavy. On another level they're just, because they're eternal souls, they're playing a bit. And even if someone dies, they just go on to another body. They had such faith, they were not disturbed by these things. But yet, on one level it was very, very heavy. Another level is just some playing between powerful personalities. And then on another level, still, it is lila, or pastimes of the Lord. But anyway, let's go back to the heavy level. Then Virbhadra, the giant-like personality, he sat on the chest of Daksha and he tried to separate his head from his body with sharp weapons, but they were unsuccessful. He tried to cut the head of Daksha with hymns, with mantras, as well as weapons, but still it was hard to cut even the surface of the skin of Daksha's head. He was very powerful. Thus Virbhadra was exceedingly bewildered. Then Virbhadra saw the wooden device in the sacrificial arena by which the animals were to have been killed. Because to test the potency of the mantras, the priest would kill an animal in the sacrifice and then bring him back to life in a younger body. So there was a device, some kind of maybe like a guillotine of some sorts or something, somehow or another, a device for chopping off the heads of the animals. So Virbhadra took the opportunity of this facility to behead Daksha. Upon seeing the action of Virbhadra, the party of Lord Shiva was pleased and they cried out joyfully. All the Buddhas, ghosts, and demons that had come made a tumultuous sound. On the other hand, the Brahmanas in charge of the sacrifice cried out in grief at the death of Daksha. Birbhadra then took the head, and with great anger he threw it into the southern side of the sacrificial fire, offering it as an oblation, an offering to the fire, and he burnt it to ashes, this head. Such anger. In this way, the followers of Lord Shiva devastated all the arrangements for sacrifice, and after setting fire to the whole arena, they departed for their master's abode, Kailash. That's the home of Lord Shiva. So that's the end of chapter 5. Now we'll begin chapter 6. So, in the first 7 verses, which, if Krishna allows, we'll read those first 7 verses. We'll hear some of the aftermath of this great destruction and ending of the sacrifice. All the priests and other members of the sacrificial assembly, and all the demigods, having been defeated by the soldiers of Lord Shiva, and injured by the weapons like tridents and swords, they approached Lord Brahma with great fear. After offering him obeisances, they began to speak in detail of all the events that had taken place. Both Lord Brahma and Lord Vishnu had already known that such events would occur in the sacrificial arena of Daksha, and knowing beforehand, they did not go to the sacrifice. Prabhupada's short purport to this. As stated in the Bhagavad Gita, Vedaham samatittani vartamanani charjuna. The Lord says, I know everything that has happened in the past and is going to happen in the future. Lord Vishnu is omniscient. He knows everything. And he therefore knew what would happen at the Daksha sacrificial arena. For this reason, neither Narayan nor Lord Brahma attended the great sacrifice performed by Daksha. And all the, when there's great distress in the universe, the demigods, they approach Lord Brahma for advice and to find out what to do. So when Lord Brahma heard everything from the demigods and the members who had attended the sacrifice, he replied, you cannot be happy in executing a sacrifice if you blaspheme a great personality and thereby offend his lotus feet. You cannot have happiness in that way. Prabhupada's purport. Lord Brahma explained to the demigods that although Daksha wanted to enjoy the results of fruit of sacrificial activities, it is not possible to enjoy when one offends a great personality like Lord Shiva. It was good for Daksha to have died in the fight, because if he had lived, he would have committed such offenses at the lotus feet of great personalities again and again. According to Manu's law, when a person commits murder, punishment is beneficial for him, because if he's not killed, he might commit more and more murders, and therefore be entangled in his future lives for having killed so many persons. Therefore, the king's punishment of a murderer is appropriate. If those who are extremely offensive are killed by the grace of the Lord, that is good for them. In other words, Lord Brahma explained to the demigods that it was good for Daksha to have been killed. You have excluded Lord Shiva, Brahma said, from taking part in the sacrificial results, and therefore you are all offenders at his lotus feet. Still, if you go without mental reservation, open-heartedly, and surrender unto him and fall down at his lotus feet, he will be very pleased. Purport. Lord Shiva is also called Asutosha. Asu means very soon, and Tosha means to become satisfied. The demigods were advised to go to Lord Shiva and beg his pardon. And because he is very easily pleased, it was certain that their purpose would be served. Lord Brahma knew the mind of Lord Shiva very well, and he was confident that the demigods who were offenders at his lotus feet, could mitigate their offenses by going to him and surrendering without reservation. Lord Brahma also advised them that Lord Shiva is so powerful that by his anger, all the planets and their chief controllers can be destroyed immediately. Also, he said that Lord Shiva was especially sorry because he had recently lost his dear wife and was also very much afflicted by the unkind words of Daksha. Under the circumstances, Lord Brahma suggested it would behoove them to go at once and beg his pardon. Lord Brahma said that no one, not even himself, not even Indra, not even the members of the sacrificial arena or all the sages could know how powerful Lord Shiva is. Under the circumstances, who would dare to commit an offense at his lotus feet? Here's Prabhupada's purport, the last purport we'll read. After Lord Brahma advised the demigods to go to Lord Shiva and beg his pardon, it was suggested how he should be satisfied and how the matter should be placed before him. Brahma also asserted that none of the conditioned souls, including himself and all the demigods, could know how to satisfy Lord Shiva. But he said, it is known that he is very easily satisfied, so let us try to satisfy him by falling at his lotus feet. Actually, the position of the subordinate is always to surrender to the Supreme. That is the instruction of Bhagavad Gita. The Lord asks everyone to give up all kinds of concocted occupations and simply surrender unto him. That will protect the conditioned soul from all sinful reactions. Similarly, in this case, Brahma also suggested that they go and surrender unto the lotus feet of Lord Shiva. For since he is very kind and easily satisfied, this action would prove effective. So here we're seeing the horrible results that come from offending a great and powerful devotional personality. Such horrible effects, such destruction, wholesale destruction. So Prabhupada brought these points out when Sati was speaking and criticizing Lord Shiva for his enmity towards someone who was pure and sinless. And this is the cure for such offenses, is apology, wholehearted, open-hearted apology. And if one sincerely apologizes, the great souls, because they're generally soft-hearted, they are soft-hearted, that's what it means to be a great soul, they're full of compassion, their anger goes away, and the offense is removed. So I wanted to read some from Chaitanya Bhagavat about this point about committing offenses to Vaishnavas. In the Padma Purana it says, Sato Nindam Paramam Aparanam Vitanote Yatakyatam Takyatam. Means that Sato Nindam Parama Aparanam, it's the supremely worst offense is to be maliciously inclined and thus offend a sata, a devotee. So Chaitanya Bhagavat and Chaitanya Charitamrita and all the shastras, they strongly warn us not to commit offenses to devotees. So we'll read a few pastimes. So this is when Lord Chaitanya, after he took sannyas, he left for Vrindavan very quickly from Jagannath Puri. And then, but instead of going to Vrindavan, he went to extricate Rupin Sanatan, Dabhyakas and Shakala Malik from in Ramakeli, where they were staying. And he brought them out. They were ministers. They were very powerful personalities. And then he went back to Navadvip. Practically, he went back to his hometown, and there were everyone, thousands and thousands of people went to see him. And he went to Kaliagram, and devotees and people from the area came and see him. Everyone in the town of Kaliya was liberated by the Lord's presence, from the most elevated souls to the most fallen souls. All received the Lord's mercy. And whoever hears this narration will also become free from the shackles of karmic reaction. The compassionate Lord stayed outside long enough for everyone to see him and bring their consciousness to a state of intense joy, because everyone wanted to see him and he was inside, so he came out and told everyone to chant. And everyone saw how beautiful Lord Chaitanya was, and they were so ecstatic. He then went inside, accompanied by his associates, and sat down, feeling very much their presence. Just then, a brahmana came and clasped the Lord's lotus feet tightly. He said, "O Lord, I have one prayer. If you can spare a little time, I will tell you." Without understanding the essence of the devotional path, I have committed a grievous offense by criticizing a Vaishnava. I would repeatedly shout and taunt, "Who is a Vaishnava in Kali Yuga? What is this kirtan, this chanting of the Lord's names?" In this way, I have condemned myself. Now, when I remember these incidents, my mind begins to burn up. O Lord, you have the potency to liberate anyone. So kindly tell me how I can remove my sins. Lord Chaitanya smiled benignly, in a very loving, giving fashion, on hearing the Brahman's straightforward and honest confession. He said, "Please listen, O Brahmana. If one who has taken poison is administered nectar, the drink of immortality, then gradually the effects of poison weaken and the body becomes immortal. So now I will reply to your question and tell you how the nectar works, how to remove the offense. All the criticism you made, although unwillingly, are equivalent to having drunk poison. So now you must drink the nectar of Krishna's names and pastimes with that same mouth. Use the tongue that offended the Vaishnavas from now on to glorify them. Above all activities, constantly glorify the Vaishnavas through songs, poems, or any other way. The ambrosia of Krishna's pastimes is transcendentally blissful and can easily dissolve all poisonous effects of Vaishnava criticism. I'm telling you truly that this is the method of purification for one who criticizes a Vaishnava unknowingly. If one gives up such malpractices and offensive behavior and constantly glorifies the Supreme Lord and his unalloyed devotees, then one can totally destroy all sins. Otherwise, millions of pious activities and penances cannot counteract the offenses committed against Krishna. So now, go and practice glorifying the devotees of the Lord and you'll become free from all sins." The devotees became very happy when they heard these wonderful instructions, and they responded by chanting, "Hari, Hari!" The Lord nicely explained the method of exoneration from the offense of Vaishnava criticism. One who disregards these instructions of Lord Chaitanya and criticizes a saintly person must drown in the ocean of grief. And those who accept the instructions of Lord Chaitanya as the Vedic truth can smilingly cross the ocean of nescience. The next visitor to see Lord Chaitanya was Devananda Pandit. When Lord Chaitanya was still in family life in Navadvip, where he performed many transcendental pastimes, Devananda Pandit did not have the desire then, at that time, to come and meet the Lord. He was a speaker of the Bhagavatam, and at one point he was offensive to Srivas Thakur, and he allowed his students, when Srivas Thakur fell into ecstasy on hearing something from the Bhagavatam, he allowed his students to throw him out, and he did not stop them. So he was offensive to Srivas Thakur. And he had never the desire to come and meet Lord Chaitanya, even though Lord Chaitanya was right there in Navadvipa. So he avoided. He did not possess sufficient faith in the Lord, so he avoided coming in contact with him. Yet although having the required piety to see him again, why did he not come across the Lord earlier? All such arrangements are actually in Krishna's hands. So when Lord Chaitanya had accepted the sannyas order and left home, Devananda Pandit had the good fortune to associate closely with Vakeshwar Pandit, who was very dear to Lord Chaitanya. Vakeshwar Pandit was such an elevated soul that he could purify the entire universe. He was always totally absorbed in relishing devotional mellows with Lord Krishna. When he danced, both the demigods and the demons were captivated. In fact, as soon as he would begin to dance, by Lord Chaitanya's mercy, all the ecstatic symptoms like crying, shivering, perspiring, laughing, horripilation, roaring and swooning in divine bliss would all appear in his person. It is impossible to describe all the devotional symptoms of Vakeshwar Pandit. By some providential arrangement, Vakeshwar Pandit came to stay in Devananda Pandit's house, attracted by his devotional qualities. Devananda Pandit was very pleased and impressed by Vakeshwar Pandit's radiant appearance and his unalloyed devotion to the Supreme Lord. He began to serve Vakeshwar Pandit with sincere devotion. When Vakeshwar Pandit would dance, he would walk around him with a cane, keeping the crowds away from disturbing him. And when on occasion Vakeshwar would fall swooning in ecstasy, Devananda Pandit rushed to catch him in his arms. He would take the dust from Vakeshwar Pandit's body and feet and smear it all over his own body with much humility and devotion. In this way, serving him and seeing his elevated devotional characteristics, they developed a strong faith in Devananda Pandit for Lord Chaitanya. From this incident, one can understand the words from the Puranas where it states that devotion in the Supreme Lord is developed only through serving the pure devotees of the Lord. Devananda Pandit was a very pious and noble person. From his childhood he was studying the Srimad Bhagavatam. He was calm and peaceful, in control of his senses, unattached to material things, and had so many good qualities. In spite of these qualities, he could not develop attraction to Lord Chaitanya's lotus feet. But by Vakeshwar Pandit's grace, his perverted intelligence became rectified. Therefore, we find in Srimad Bhagavatam that service to a pure devotee is even higher than service to the Supreme Lord himself. Thus in the Bhagavatam it is stated, there may exist some doubt about the success in attaining perfection by serving the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But there is absolutely no doubt whatsoever in achieving perfection by serving the pure devotees of the Supreme Lord. Therefore it is clear that to gain the mercy of Lord Krishna, one must serve as unalloyed and surrendered devotees. Devananda Pandit developed the right devotional attachment for Lord Gauranga due to his intimate association with Vakeshwar Pandit. Now he lay on the ground, hugging the Lord's lotus feet in great awe and humility. He reached out to the Lord, and the Lord reached out to him and made him sit. And in this way he forgave all his previous offenses and blessed him. The Lord said, because you have served Vakeshwar Pandit so well, I'm able to see you here today. Vakeshwar is a manifestation and embodiment of Krishna's transcendental potency. Hence, whoever serves him well immediately attains the lotus feet of Krishna. Lord Krishna's favorite residence is in the heart of Vakeshwar Pandit. When Vakeshwar dances, Krishna himself is induced to dance. Vakeshwar Pandit's presence converts any place into a place of holy pilgrimage, into the spiritual abode of Krishna. And I'd like to read one more. Suddenly, a leper appeared in that assembly and came before the Lord. He threw himself down on the ground like a stick, groaning in pain. Then getting up, he lifted his arms high and began to wail loudly. He said, O merciful Lord, you have risen like the sun on this earth only to dissipate the sufferings of this material life. Your compassionate nature is always moved by the distress of others, and so I have come to you. I am burning in the pain of leprosy. Now tell me, please, kindly tell me how I can be relieved from this. When the leper had finished speaking, the Lord addressed him. He addressed him angrily. With a thundering voice, he said, "Go! Go away from here! Just seeing you incurs sin. Even if a very pious man sees your face, the day will bring him woe. You are a wretched sinner and a Vaishnava offender. Much more suffering is in store for you. You cannot even tolerate this pain, you contemptuous reprobate. How are you going to live through the sufferings of the Kumbhipaka hell? A Vaishnava is so pure that just by uttering his name it cleanses the entire universe. Lord Brahma takes pleasure in singing the glories of the Vaishnavas. The Srimad Bhagavatam unequivocally explains that a Vaishnava is more dear to Lord Krishna than even elevated personalities like Lord Ananta, Lakshmi Devi, or Lord Brahma, or Lord Shiva. In Srimad Bhagavatam it is said, O Uddhav, you, my devotees, are more dear to me than anyone else. Although Brahma is my son, Shiva my partial expansion, Shankarshan my brother, and Lakshmi Devi my wife, they are not so dear to me as you." So anyone who offends a Vaishnava and criticizes him has to suffer terrible consequences life after life. A person's piety, education, and austerity are rendered useless by criticizing a Vaishnava. Lord Krishna even refuses to accept worship from a Vaishnava offender. Mother Earth feels blessed when the Vaishnava dances on her, whose very sight destroys nations and sin in every direction. And when dancing, he lifts his arms to the sky and waves away all ill fortune in the heavenly abodes. Such an elevated devotee is Shiva's Pandit, and you are so demoniac that you have offended him. Your leprosy is just a mere reminder of your offenses. The actual punishment is yet to come. Therefore, I do not even want to see you, and I am not the one to deliver you." The leper quietly heard the Lord's chastisement. Then with utmost humility and meekness, holding straw in his teeth, he began to speak. He prayed, "In my ignorance I have destroyed myself. Delirious with material disease, I have grievously criticized and offended a Vaishnava. For this heinous act, I have rightly deserved my painful due. Now, my Lord, pray. I beg you, think of my deliverance. It is the nature of saintly personalities to heal the suffering of the wretched and forgive the blasphemers. Therefore, I have taken shelter of you. But if you turn me away, who will save me? You know the penances for the different sinful activities. So as a kind father to all, please tell me what penances will condone my offense, will remove my offense that I have sown by Vaishnava aparad." So now it is clear that I have painfully harvested grief. The Lord replied, "Leprosy for an offender is just his first punishment. It is only the beginning. The worst is yet to come. Yamaraj has 8,40,000 types of excruciating punishments waiting for the offenders. You should go right away to Shiva's Pandit and throw yourself at his feet. It was Shiva's Pandit you offended, so you can be excused by his mercy alone. If a thorn is stuck in the throat, then it has to be pulled out by another thorn. Not that when a thorn gets stuck in the feet, the shoulders have to be treated. This is the only means for your reprieve. Shiva's Pandit is very elevated and intelligent. If you beg him, then he will surely forgive you." The devotees expressed their loud approval of the Lord's perfect and honest instructions. The leper paid his obeisances to the Lord and the devotees and hurried off to see Shiva's Pandit. Shiva's Pandit, out of his causeless mercy, exonerated the leper from all offenses and saved him from the worst
fate.
The Lord had clearly described the horrific results of offending a Vaishnava. After reading or hearing this, if a person is still so foolish to indulge in criticism and blasphemy of a Vaishnava, then Lord Chaitanya will personally mete out the due punishments. If one sees two Vaishnavas quarreling, then one should never think that something is amiss or that there is enmity or malice between them. Such quarreling is in fact pleasing to the Lord and is transcendental. The arguments and abuses exchanged between Rukmini Devi and Satyabhama Devi, although sounding like serious fights, are actually not so, because they are forever united in their service to their common Lord and Master. There is no enmity between Vaishnavas. The Supreme Lord Himself induces these fights due to His frolicsome nature. But if anyone foolishly sides with one Vaishnava against another, then he is doomed due to offending a Vaishnava. The Vaishnavas are the extensions of the Lord's limbs, so how can one benefit by serving Him with one hand and collecting and giving pain to Him with the other, to the Lord? One who has developed such vision becomes steady in devotional service. One who understands that Lord Krishna and His devotees, the Vaishnavas, are none different, and with this knowledge serves the Lord, can easily cross the ocean of nescience. One who glorifies, hears, and understands these transcendental subject matters can always avoid Vaishnava aparad. Thank you very much. Any questions or comments? Yeah.
I come right into that verse. Sorry, Bhagavad. It said that in endeavoring to serve personality quality, one is not assured of success. That one tries to serve a Vaishnava, one is assured of success. What would be the context that in trying to serve personality quality, one is not assured of success?
Well, the idea is that this is how Krishna accepts service. And there's that famous verse from, I'm not sure where, that maybe Adi Purana, one who says he is my devotee is not my devotee. Because to approach Krishna, one has to be fully pure. Just like if you try to get very, very close to fire, you cannot get close because your substance is earth and water, and the substance of fire is fire. So you have to be of the same substance as Krishna to approach Him directly. So we need an intermediary to perform service to Krishna. And I think Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur explains in his commentary on Sarvadamam Prityajam Mamekam Sharanam Raja. He said, in your case now I am making an exception that you can serve me directly. Otherwise, you have to serve through a devotee. One who says he is devotee is not my devotee. One who says he's the devotee of my devotee, he is my devotee. Any other questions or comments? Okay, so tomorrow we'll continue and see how the demigods approach Lord Shiva. First of all, because it had described, Sati said to Daksha, you think that Lord Shiva is a poor man? You don't know his opulence. You don't know our opulence. So we'll see some of the beauty of Kailash, the place of Lord Shiva. Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai. Lord Shiva ki jai. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Tagore Premanandayalaya.